Our first lesson comes from Luke chapter 15. Listen for God's word. Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant land, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father, but while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate."
Our second lesson this morning continues our story from the Gospel of Luke. Now, his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf, because he has got him back safe and sound." Then the older brother became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, "Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him." Then the father said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found." This is the word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God.
Starting over. What's the first thing you think of when you hear those words? Starting over again. Is that a good thing or a bad thing to you? Or maybe some of both? For some of us, starting over is like a second chance, a clean slate, a new opportunity filled with hope and possibilities. We welcome the chance to begin again. For others of us, to start over might mean that we have made a mistake, or a bad choice, or an error in our thinking or judgment. Or maybe it means that life didn't go the way we had planned or expected it to go. And so now we have to reevaluate everything, go back to square one and start all over again. Having to start over may bring with it feelings of impatience and frustration, self-doubt and criticism, even failure. Let's face it, we live in a culture that prizes goals and accomplishments and reaching your destination. But it rarely acknowledges the process required to get there. And yet, if we stop and think about it, our journeys through life are far more often about the twists and the turns, the detours and the obstacles, the false starts and wrong directions, than they are about any one destination or achievement. The path through life is full of do-overs, second chances, and starting over again. Just think about any young person, or the person at midlife, or the retiree who is seeking a new sense of purpose or direction in life. You can be paralyzed by your restlessness or uncertainty, or you can take a risk and try something new so that you can learn whether or not it's really what you are looking for or where it might lead you next. Think about every great discovery, innovation, or invention in human history. Whether you're trying to learn a new language or scale Mount Everest, whether you want to perfect a recipe for the perfect chocolate chip cookie or break the sound barrier, whether you want to travel to the moon or develop an effective vaccine for polio or COVID-19, they all require trial and error, repeated practice, learning from your mistakes and trying again. Think about any journey of healing and health, sobriety, or spiritual growth. How often do we start a new diet and exercise plan, or promise to quit smoking or drinking, or commit to read the Bible and pray more often, only to get a few weeks or even days into our new routine and to find ourselves bored, disillusioned, beating ourselves up for even thinking we could change, and maybe just going back to our old ways of doing things. Whether we realize it or not, starting over is part of just about everything we do. And as much as we might want to solve the problem, master the material, finish the job, or reach our destination, the journey to get there will require multiple fresh starts, second chances, and do-overs. Beginning again is simply part of the process. Which is why it is also the sixth practice in our Lenten pilgrimage this year. You see, the season of Lent is all about journeys. Jesus' journey to the cross and our journey as Jesus' disciples. This Lent, we have committed ourselves to a pilgrimage of growing in faith, walking more closely with God, journeying within ourselves to discover God's divine presence within us and in the world around us. Along the way, we have been learning specific practices to support us on our pilgrimage. Practices like hearing God's call and responding, packing lightly, crossing the threshold, making the way by walking, and being uncomfortable. And we have probably already discovered that doing these practices is not as simple as they might seem. As Christine Walters-Paintner writes in our guidebook for this journey, The Soul of a Pilgrim, the human heart is a funny thing, full of passion for spirit one day, and then feeling lost or wandering astray the next. That's why pilgrimage is a continual process of new beginnings. As Paintner explains, there will be days when we don't feel like coming to the meditation mat or sitting in a quiet corner to rest and pray and listen for God's guidance. There will be days when life seems to actively conspire against the peace or transformation we seek, and we start to believe that progress isn't possible for us. We may start to believe that our lives are just too full to cultivate this kind of spiritual awareness or growth, this deeper relationship with God. When this happens, and it will happen, she writes, our invitation is to notice this and then to start over. This starting over, this beginning again, is at the very core of our Christian story. From the story of creation at the beginning of the Bible to the story of God's new heaven and new earth at the end in Revelation. From God's big do-over with Noah and the ark to Jesus telling Nicodemus that he must be born anew. From the prophets of old declaring that God is about to do a new thing to Paul and the other apostles offering new life to everyone who will hear and believe the good news. Beginning again is at the very center of who we are as children of God and disciples of Jesus Christ. Today's scripture lesson is no exception. It's the familiar story of the prodigal son. Here we have the classic story of the young adult who wants to leave everything behind to go and explore the world and find something bigger and better for himself beyond the humble comforts and confines of home. Of course, we all know how it turns out in Jesus' telling. The young man's reckless behavior and bad choices bring him to the brink of starvation, and he realizes that despite all of the bridges he's burned, he would have a better life back home as one of his father's servants. And so he returns to his father's house to beg forgiveness and begin again. The younger son is not the only one in this story, however, who faces new beginnings. In their own way, each of the three characters is challenged to start over again, to live into a second chance at life. The story of the younger son is merely the most obvious. He is selfish in his pursuit of pleasure and happiness. He makes many wrong turns and ends up in the fields taking care of pigs, starving and wishing he could eat the pigs' scraps. He finally comes to his senses and realizes the error of his ways. And he returns home humbled and ready to begin again, to admit his wrongdoing and to ask for mercy, even if it means living as a servant in his father's household. The father must begin again after his younger son demands his part of the inheritance, essentially saying that he wishes his father was dead and turning his back on his family and home. Devastated, the father must rebuild his life with his remaining son as he grieves his loss. And then one day, years later, when the father sees a figure on the horizon, he recognizes his wayward son returning home. The father has a choice: welcome him home with open arms and attempt to rebuild his family, or hold on to his pain and resentment, making his disinherited son live with the consequences of his choices and actions. The father chooses to respond with compassion, forgiveness, gratitude, and extravagant generosity, running to meet his son, hugging and kissing him, and celebrating his return with fancy robes and rings and a huge party. And finally, we have the older brother, who faithfully stayed by his father's side, obedient and reliable through all the ups and downs. When he sees what is happening, he has a fit. "Wait a minute," he yells at his father. "What about me? If this is how you treat this son of yours," notice he does not say my brother, "this son of yours who made such terrible choices and mistakes, who broke your heart and wasted everything you gave him, what about me? How come I never got a fancy new robe or a shiny ring or a party with my friends?" The father pleads with his older son, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But this brother of yours has finally seen the light. He who was dead has come back into our lives to be part of our family again. How can I not celebrate?" Now it's the older brother who has a choice. Ignore all of the blessings of his life up to this point and hold on to his resentment and transactional way of living life. "Because I did this for you, now you owe me this, this, and this." Or wake up to the fact that he has always been the apple of his father's eye, a beloved son who never lacked for a roof over his head, food on the table before him, or the love of family at his side. And then offer those same gifts to his brother as they work to rebuild their relationship. Now it is the older brother who could lose his way, choosing jealousy and resentment and becoming the lost son. Or he could choose to follow his father's gracious lead. As John Painter writes in his reflection on this passage, forgiveness and gratitude are not limited resources. "I don't get less of them if you get more. They grow and multiply when shared. This is what the forgiving father is rejoicing. His lost son has returned, and everyone's life is better for it." We can react as the older son does and hold on to past grudges, but it will destroy us in the end. However, it's always better to react as the Father does and celebrate the chance to begin again. The better option is to remember that there is more than enough grace for us in our wanderings. Interestingly, Jesus doesn't tell us what the older brother chooses, perhaps because Jesus knows so many of us will identify with him instead of the younger brother. I often wonder if a better title for this story would be the parable of the two lost sons or of the forgiving father. But maybe we should really call it the parable of new beginnings. Beginning again is not always easy. But both the parable and the chapter in Painter's book this week highlight what is necessary for this important practice along our Lenten pilgrimage. Virtues like humility and compassion, forgiveness, gratitude, and a sense of humor, even. Beginning again requires humility, acknowledging that we don't have all the answers, that there is always more to learn on the journey of faith and life. We also need compassion to be gentle with ourselves and others as we take risks, try new things, and maybe even make some wrong turns. Remembering, as Henry Ford famously said, the only real mistake is the one from which we learn nothing. We also need to be willing to forgive ourselves and each other so that we can move toward reconciliation, which is ultimately what will get us back on the path to healing and growth. Gratitude helps us see the blessings that we have, even in the midst of struggle and pain, and it keeps us grounded in God's goodness. And finally, it helps to have a sense of humor so that we do not take ourselves too seriously. Both humor and humility come from the same Latin root word, humus, which means dirt. It's also where the word human comes from, which matches the story in Genesis where human beings are created from the dust or the dirt of the earth. What a great reminder of who we are and where we have all come from. Humility, compassion, forgiveness, gratitude, and a sense of humor. All of these will help us begin again on any spiritual pilgrimage, as well as any journey in life, no matter how far off the path we have gotten. They will help us cultivate what Zen Buddhists call a beginner's mind, an attitude of openness, curiosity, and eagerness to learn. As the monk and mystic, the scholar and social activist Thomas Merton wrote, there are only three stages to this work: to be a beginner, to be more of a beginner, and to be only a beginner. This is the mindset of a pilgrim on the path with God. When I first realized that I would be preaching on this practice a few weeks ago, I immediately thought of my friend and colleague, Carrie Pattison. Carrie is a Presbyterian minister who spent 12 years working as an associate pastor at the Bronxville Reformed Church in Yonkers. A little over 2 years ago, Carrie purposely blew up her life. After experiencing several personal losses and feeling a restlessness deep down inside, Carrie resigned from her job so that she could hike the Appalachian Trail by herself. At the time, I was captivated by her blog posts, which she shared through Facebook and which described many of her experiences along the trail. And I'm hoping to invite her to speak to us in more detail about her amazing journey sometime soon. But I specifically remembered some of her posts which described the challenges and the disruptions she faced along the way. And I thought that Carrie would have a unique perspective on this practice of beginning again. So I called her this week, and she agreed to let me interview her. Let's take a listen.
Thank you so much for doing this today. I really appreciate it. Can you tell me what made you decide to hike the Appalachian Trail?
Yes. I would say there were a couple of factors. One is that I had heard about Cheryl Strayed hiking the PCT on the West Coast. Yep. And I had read the book Wild and seen the movie, and I had taken a workshop with her. And so I was really fascinated by this idea that as a woman and going by myself, that I would be able to do something like this, to spend that much time in nature and get to have such an adventure, kind of in the midlife season of my world. And then there were some other things too preceding it, some personal losses that kind of propelled me to say, you know what, I think this is time to take this kind of a very long walk in nature and have a pilgrimage of sorts.
Yeah. Was there anything particular you were looking for as a result of doing this kind of pilgrimage?
Yeah, I would say, Tammy, that the process itself was part of what I was looking for. I wasn't necessarily thinking that it would change me into a completely different person, but this idea of spending 5 to 7 months mostly in the woods and getting to meet fascinating people and get to see these little towns along the eastern seaboard, to get to wake up with the birds and the wind and go to bed at night with the stars. I just felt like what I was hoping to get out of it was a deeper experience, really, of God and of myself and of the natural world. And the more research I started doing into through hikes, I discovered that that I could also anticipate having a really rich community experience. And all of that turned out to be the case.
Wow, that's great. So as I told you, our church is doing a pilgrimage theme, and we've been looking at different pilgrim practices. And today, the practice that I'm preaching on today is beginning again. And I remember reading from some of your blog posts from the trail that you encountered all kinds of obstacles or distractions or disruptions along the way. And then you kind of had to figure out how to begin again. Could you tell us about some of those?
Absolutely. Yeah. At the very beginning for me, Tammy, the biggest sense of beginning again was going from a career where I had been a minister for 12 years and I had been an associate pastor at the same church during all those years. So I kind of felt like I knew what I was doing a little bit. And the first beginning again was simply to step on the trail as a beginner. I had done a lot of hiking, but I had not done a lot of backpacking. And I discovered that long distance backpacking is really its own world of skill sets and practice and athleticism and familiarity with how to put together your pack and your gear and cook your meals and kind of manage your time. And so beginning again in my 40s with something that I really had to be humble about and ask for help a lot. That was the first thing. And then along the way, there were lots of little beginning agains in terms of, you know, I started out, made some friends and we kind of formed a trail family. And then that trail family quickly sped up and got faster and did more miles a day than I could keep up with. So I had to kind of begin again and make some new friends and discovered that there were just as many amazing people behind me as there had been ahead of me. So that was another beginning again. And then beginning again, when I got off trail for a few days to attend a close friend's wedding, then I had to begin again when I came back to the trail and tried to catch up with some of my new trail family. And yeah, it was a lot of beginning again, just like life.
So how far did you get on the Appalachian Trail and why did you stop?
In 2019, I got to mile 1308, I believe. It was in the early 1300s. I made it up to New Jersey, and I had to get off because I fell on an exposed ridge side of a mountain in New Jersey during a thunderstorm and badly broke my ankle. Wow. So that ended it for 2019, and it was a sad day.
So how did you cope with having to stop, especially that way, and not being able to finish the way you'd expected to?
I felt like, I mean, of course, I was totally devastated at the beginning. I was kind of in denial and wanted to think that maybe I was going to be able to just have a sprained ankle and get back on trail. And when the news sank in from the ER and the x-rays showed how bad the break was, you know, there was like tremendous disappointment, but I also felt like in the scheme of my life, you know, by the time you're in your 40s, you've already gone through way harder things than a broken ankle. So in the scheme of my life, I felt like, okay, this is doable. And I also had the perspective, Tammy, that like every day out there was a gift. And there was honestly a part of me that was surprised I'd made it that far. Like surprised I hadn't gotten injured before, because there's so many precarious spots and storms and rocks and slippery bits. And then the other way I handled it, thanks be to God, was that my friends really rallied around me and had a beautiful kind of send off for me before I officially got off trail. And they all came to the hotel where I was staying and took care of me and were just like really awesome to me.
Wow, that's great. So I think I saw, though, that you did get back on the trail this past year. What was it like to do that, to go back and try and start hiking the Appalachian Trail again?
It was incredible. I had hoped to go back in 2020 and do the whole rest of the trail, but due to COVID, that wasn't possible. So I was able to get back on trail and do about 300 more miles in 2020, and was joined by some fellow friends that I'd met the year before. And in a way, beginning again the next year was like 10 times more awesome than the first year, because I knew what I was doing. I had my gear dialed in. I knew how to be compassionate with myself. I knew like how to get in and out of towns. I knew just the fact that there would be people around me. So I didn't have all the fears that I had the first year. And it was really, really fun to actually make the switch from being what they call a through hiker to a section hiker, kind of a recalibrating.
So how would you connect this experience that you've had, and it sounds like you may continue to have, to the journey of faith that all of us are on?
Yeah, I love that question, because that was a huge part of why I went. I really did want to get a deeper experience of faith as a follower of Jesus. And I feel like I'm still processing that connection, but there's this amazing passage in the book of Hebrews that talks about how we are all wanderers and pilgrims on this earth, longing for a home that we're not yet in, and that we're citizens both of this world and also we're citizens of another world. And so to me, the idea of beginning again, the idea of being pilgrims, as followers of Jesus, it reminds me that I keep starting over in the faith. I keep learning new things. I keep being humbled by what I learned from the kids in my new church and the oldest people and the people that God brings along my journey. Now that I'm serving a small church in Woodstock, New York, it's a very different population than I was with before. And similar to the trail, God keeps bringing people along my path where I get to hear their story and they get to hear mine. And we go through different kinds of storms together that are not the literal kind of the trail, but that are the other kinds of storms that life brings, you know, the losses and the griefs and the challenges and the conflicts. And so I think for me, you know, whether someone's able to do an actual through hike or not, I think the concept of pilgrimage applies to just our everyday experience of being children of God.
So whether we are hiking the Appalachian Trail, moving through a time of transition in our lives, or journeying within to deepen our relationship with God, ourselves, and the world around us, our pilgrimage will almost certainly be interrupted, stalled, or pulled off trail at times. Sometimes by life circumstances, and sometimes by disruptions or distractions of our own making. Regardless of how or when or why, we practice beginning again, getting back on the path, recommitting ourselves to the journey, opening ourselves up to learning from our missteps and the detours, and receiving the new gifts that each of these experiences brings. This beginning again, this starting anew, is a gift in itself, and it is the pilgrim way to start anew in each and every moment and in each and every place that life takes us. As we travel the pilgrim way and begin again, we know that we can trust in God, who, like the loving and gracious Father in the parable, is faithful and walks with us every step of the way on our journey, leading us toward new and abundant life, not just somewhere down the road or in the next life, but here and now, right where we are. As Saint Benedict said so long ago, always we begin again. Amen.